Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. We're asking you guys which team's exit would be the most surprising. Hit us up on the CNG hotline, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. But right now, Gojo, we got to go out to Kansas City and bring on Athletic Chiefs reporter Nate Taylor. And Nate, to kick it off with this matchup between the Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs, we know that the Chiefs have won five straight home games at Arrowhead. But public enemy number one for that team has to be Josh Allen cutting the head off the snake for the Buffalo Bills offense. We've seen what he can do with his legs in that game, wild card weekend against the Patriots. So what is Steve Spagnuolo and the Chiefs defense talking about this week leading up to this matchup on how they plan to slow down that aspect of Buffalo's offense?
Well, hey, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. By the way, love the music that introduced this segment. But you're right. I mean, This is a great matchup. I'm so excited. But for Steve Spagnuolo and the Chiefs defense, it's all about pressure, right? Whether it's manufactured with the blitz or what I believe will be the real difference maker in this game is, can the Chiefs get pressure with four to Josh Allen, right? Whether that's, pressure him to throw within the pocket. Maybe that's a couple sacks, which they didn't happen in week five earlier this season when the Bills came to Arrowhead and won in a convincing fashion. But look, Chris Jones didn't play in that game. He's a Pro Bowl defensive tackle. The team did not have Melvin Ingram at the time. That was obviously before the trade deadline. And even Frank Clark, who did play in that game, he was dealing with hamstring injuries at the time, and he's played a lot better in the second half of the season. So can the Chiefs get some pressure on Josh Allen? Can they actually hit the quarterback and put him on the ground? That's something that the New England Patriots had a hard time doing last week. I wonder if there will be just enough blitzes to sort of give, a little bit of a surprise to Josh Allen, but they shouldn't do it too much. They should rely on their pass rush.
Nate, you mentioned some of the players that weren't available in that game here. Injury-wise, we saw reports that Clyde Edwards-Helaire looks like he could make his return this Sunday for the Chiefs. What else are you keeping your eye on as the injury reports roll out late in the week?
Yeah, you're correct. So Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a full go. He was a full participant in all three practices this week, including today. Interestingly enough, I still think the Chiefs should ride Jerick McKinnon, who has played really well over the last two games. Obviously, he had a touchdown pass, or touchdown reception, in the win over the Steelers. And I think Clyde Edwards-Helaire will at least give a nice mix, a nice 1-2 combo with him and Jerick McKinnon. The one thing that does concern me is we know the Bills have so many weapons on offense, right? Stephon Diggs, Austin Knox, Emmanuel Sanders, Isaiah McKenzie all of a sudden is really good. They need cornerbacks, and the Chiefs might be without one of their best ones, which is Rashad Fenton. He's been dealing with a back injury. It flared up on him pregame against the Pittsburgh Steelers last week. He did not play. He does not practice this week. I find it very unlikely for him to play, and that may be an opening in the Chiefs' secondary, given the fact that the Chiefs may have to rely more on Daniel Sorensen, who's their third safety and who has struggled mightily this year, particularly against some spread offenses, most notably him giving up a pretty significant catch to Stephon Diggs in the first matchup and a touchdown pass to Dawson Knox.
Talking with the Athletic Chiefs reporter Nate Taylor on Canty and Golic Jr. And Nate, one of the absences that's going to loom large for that Buffalo Bills secondary is Trey White. We know that he played in that matchup in week five and helped slow down that passing attack for the Kansas City Chiefs. But how do you anticipate that absence impacting this particular matchup between these two teams?
Yeah, what's interesting about this is because, look, we think about Tre'Davious White as a cover guy, as a guy who can really stay man-to-man and do a really nice job. But I think for this Chiefs matchup, at least in the first game, he was so good in bump-and-run coverage, which allowed Mahomes to have to get to his second and his third reads a little quicker. Without him, I just wonder, can Travis Kelce have a better game? Because you can't necessarily put Tre'Davious White on there because, unfortunately, he's not available. And he was obviously their best cornerback this season. I think the Bills aren't going to blitz, but this will force Mahomes, and I think he's done a much better job over it the last month or so, of spreading the ball around. You can't necessarily rely on Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce to get you to the AFC Championship game. You're going to need some completion, some highlight plays from Mecole Hardman, who's a third-year receiver, who's the second-fastest guy on the team. Byron Pringle has had a really nice year as well. And look, as I mentioned before, Jarrett McKinnon is a dual threat. He can obviously run the ball really well, but he has great hands, nice speed, some elusiveness in the open field. If the Bills play back, if they don't blitz, if they make the Chiefs go on these long, sustaining 14-play drives, then Patrick Mahomes is going to have to spread the ball around. But also, without Tre'Davious White, maybe you get more easier completions near the line of scrimmage versus a team that has really two good safeties and obviously an all-pro cornerback that's just not available.
Yeah, we talk so much about the matchups on the perimeter here. I want to head back to the line of scrimmage because we know that's where the Kansas City Chiefs lost the Super Bowl against the Bucs last season. It's an entirely new group in there. Nate, how impressed has Andy Reid been by the performance this season of that group, particularly the pair of rookies that he's got in the middle of that line?
Yeah, it's a great point. And honestly, fellas, because we're asking this question not first, that tells you how successful this whole season has been. Just the idea that they could put five new dudes in front of Patrick Mahomes, and he hasn't been hit. And I would like to remind your listeners, too, that, you know, when this game was played last year in the AFC Championship game, Patrick Mahomes was dealing with a toe injury. Obviously, we learned that the offensive line had some struggles because there was injuries. Well, because of the young rookies and Trey Smith and Creed Humphrey, they have just been excellent. They've been way above expectations. Trey Smith has played every offensive snap this season. He's the only guy on the offense to have done that, and he's a rookie. It's just wildly impressive. And look, with the tackle situation, you know, I think Orlando Brown Jr. is a pro bowler. He's now sort of proven that he can play left tackle at a high level in a pass-happy offense, which is obviously different than coming from Baltimore last year. And I'll give a lot of credit to Joe Tooney, who's been playing with a broken hand for a large portion of the season. He's just rock solid. He's consistent. I call him a robot because he really doesn't make mistakes with technique. And for the one guy who was on the team last year that is back this year and is playing an important role is Andrew Wiley, who was the third-string right tackle when the season began, but he held up very well, I thought, against T.J. Watt. The Chiefs have sort of moved the pocket to sort of help Patrick Mahomes in a lot of different ways, which is different from what happened in the Super Bowl. And Andrew Wiley had a whole year to get better at being a backup tackle, and it has been shown on the film. And so I'll be surprised if the Bills, even with their improved pass rush, if they'll get much pressure on Patrick Mahomes, because really no one has this season outside of the Tennessee Titans.
Nate, I'm always curious as to the player's psyche, especially going into big games, playoff games. And so how much stock have the Chiefs players put into their regular season loss to the Bills this year or their win against the Buffalo Bills in the AFC Championship game last year?
Yeah, you know, I think there's some quiet, shall we say, aggressive aggro waiting to be unleashed on Sunday. Now, in these Zoom sessions, they've done a very good job. I think Anthony Hitchens, the veteran linebacker, today said, hey, we're a completely different team from week five. But I have a feeling that Chris Jones, because he didn't play in the first game, wants to sort of prove to the league that, you know, I'm one of the better interior pass rushers. And yes, Josh Allen is exceptional, but like, hey, you want to play with pressure in your face? Because I'm gonna bring it. So I feel like this team is highly motivated. I don't feel like Travis Kelce had one of his best games this season against the Bills. We all know Patrick Mahomes was kind of in a slump, honestly, during that stretch in October. So this team is highly motivated. And one of the things that I asked Andy Reid today that I felt was really interesting to hear from was the guys who've been there before. How much does championship pedigree and experience matter? And Andy Reid thinks it matters a lot. And for guys like everyone I've mentioned earlier on the team that is a veteran, like they've been to back-to-back Super Bowls. And the Buffalo Bills, in the Sean McDermott era, fellas, they have yet to win a postseason game on the road. So we'll see how much that experience matters. But the Chiefs don't need to find motivation. It's been there all week.
Ready and available for the Kansas City Chiefs heading into the divisional round this weekend. Nate, we appreciate you giving us some time and helping us take a look at this matchup heading into this round here. Enjoy the game, and I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon.
Oh, the pleasure was all mine, fellas. Thank you so much for having me.
Nate Taylor does a great job covering the Kansas City Chiefs over at The Athletic. Here at ESPN Radio, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. Save when you bundle auto, home, or motorcycle insurance. Visit progressive.com. That's going to be a fantastic matchup. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers against the Rams are going to be an awesome matchup this weekend. But coming up next, there is only one game this weekend that can lay claim to this title. Loser Leaves Town match. We'll tell you which one that is next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Hit us up at the CNG call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. On which team's exit would be the most surprising in the divisional round. We also want you to chime in on our Twitter poll on what is the best weekend on the NFL calendar. And Gojo, you know how I feel about it. I know people have got opening weekend out there. You've got Super Bowl weekend. A lot of people say it's this weekend. For me, it's Thanksgiving weekend. Because you got all the family, you got all the food, and you got all the football, wall-to-wall football on Thanksgiving Day. And then, of course, you got the NFL slate that Sunday. So that would be my vote. But you're able to chime in on ESPN Radio's poll that we have up for Canty and Golic Jr. So make sure you guys do that. But getting back to the action that we got slated for this weekend, the game that you tabbed as the loser leaves town game, the Green Bay Packers taking on the San Francisco 49ers. And we both know that both quarterbacks, for different reasons, have a lot of speculation around their futures with their respective franchises. And Gojo, which one of those guys would you think is most likely to be back with their team next year?
I think it's Aaron Rodgers. I think if you ask me, Chris, to handicap the options for Aaron Rodgers heading into this offseason, whether we're talking about he stays in Green Bay, he leaves Green Bay, or he retires, I would put staying in Green Bay up at the top based on what we've seen over the course of this year. He got everything he asked for. The team went out and was highly successful again. He seems content based on everything we've heard from him outwardly. And Lord knows, Chris, he's a guy that loves to get in front of a microphone, loves to hit up Pat McAfee on Tuesdays and go ahead and let his voice be heard. So I feel pretty good about him sticking around next year. We know Jimmy Garoppolo's gone. He knows that he is gone. This is the Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes model played to perfection so far.
No, and I hear you on that. With Jimmy Garoppolo, he's on borrowed time. I just wonder if they're somehow, some way able to go into Lambeau and pull off the upset, and then you're talking about them being in the conference championship game. I think that the public sentiment would start to be on Jimmy Garoppolo's side when it comes to whether or not he deserves an opportunity to start as the Niners quarterback in 2022. It presents the opportunity for them to have an open competition in training camp and allow the best man to win out. Now, I get it. The 49ers have a ton of draft capital invested in Trey Lance, and at some point, it's going to be his show in the foreseeable future. But with Jimmy Garoppolo, I know that postseason wins isn't a quarterback stat, but if he's a guy that you can do high-level winning with, then I think that there would be some consideration in hanging on to him. And also keeping in mind that Trey Lance is on a rookie deal, and Jimmy Garoppolo's salary cap number is very manageable when you consider the current quarterback rate. So I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Jimmy is going to be gone no matter what. I can see a path to him being back with the Niners next year. Now, with Aaron Rodgers, I think it's more likely that he will be back with the Packers. But if things don't go right in this game against the 49ers, a team that, from a talent standpoint, they're head and shoulders better than, I don't know, man. It could turn into a situation where Aaron Rodgers decides that he wants to go with a different organization. We know that there's been some friction between him and the general manager. I don't know that they've completely smoothed all of that stuff over. I just think a loss in this spot in the postseason would only exacerbate the issues that have existed between Rodgers and the front office over the course of the last couple of years, and I think that that would open the door for A-Rod to bounce.
Yeah, I get that that's still a possibility because, listen, coming off the bye and managing to lose in this spot would be a massive blow. This team's lost in back-to-back NFC championship games. We understand what the standard is. But, Chris, to that end, I just wonder, looking out there, what the option is that's readily available and doable that's better than what he's got top to bottom. Because I think the one place we've all come around to since this past summer is the idea of the Packers roster. So much of what we talked about was Brian Gutekunst, their GM, who he went out and acquired, why he wasn't listening to Aaron Rodgers. And so much of the conversation just stemmed from not communicating it well to their star quarterback that after a while we look back and said, huh, well, a lot of these moves that he made seem pretty prudent. A lot of them have stood up well to the test of time here. So do you have a team out there that would match up well enough with him to say, hey, if they lose this weekend, he's got a better option to add to that legacy immediately?
I don't know if you can say that there's a team that has a quarterback need that would be that much better than Green Bay. I don't think there's a clear-cut answer to that. The one place that I would circle would be the Denver Broncos. The only issue with that, Gojo, is you got to look at the landscape of that division. The Raiders were a playoff team. The Kansas City Chiefs are still in the playoffs. You got the L.A. Chargers, which are no slouch. They were in it up until week 18. So, I mean, that's not an easy division or comparatively to the NFC North, which the Green Bay Packers have dominated for the better part of the last couple of decades. So I don't know that there's an easy answer when it comes to that, but maybe he might just want different. And this is a guy that has that mercurial personality where that wouldn't be something that's off the table. And I got to think, with the mental makeup that Aaron Rodgers has, he's not going to be scared away by competing against Pat Mahomes, competing against Justin Herbert, and competing against Derek Carr. I don't think he's built like that. So I do think there's an opportunity there. Denver has the championship defense. They got plenty of skill position weapons. You got Javonte Williams in that backfield. You got Tim Patrick. You got Cortland Sutton. You got Noah Fant. There's a glut of weapons for him to spray the ball around to. And we've seen that franchise in the past have success with high-profile quarterbacks that are free agents coming in there and winning championships. So Denver would be the place. But again, I think that would have more to do with Aaron Rodgers not wanting to stay where he's at versus finding greener pastures.
And that's going to be the one thing that's hardest to predict because, like you said, that's predicated off the relationship. And from the outside, again, we've heard Aaron Rodgers mention Brian Gutekunst's name. We've finally seen him utter that and talk about what this franchise has done in fixing that relationship and feeling respected. But overall, we can still only know so much that's gone on behind closed doors. You brought back guys that he liked. Randall Cobb's going to be suiting back up this weekend. We know that was one of the concessions to kind of let him know, hey, we hear you. We value your opinion on all this, and we're going to do better going forward. We will check in on that. At ChrisCandy99 and at Mike Golic Jr. on the Twitter feed is where you can get at us with that as well. But coming up next, we talked to Matt Bowen, who does such a great job on the NFL matchup show earlier this week on Candy and Golic Jr. And so it got us to thinking, what is the most intriguing matchup for every game heading into the divisional round? We'll give you our shots at this next after this word from Indeed. Now, guys, this new year, make the resolution to speed up your hiring process. You check out Indeed. It's the hiring platform that makes it simple to attract, screen, and interview candidates all at the same place. Just sponsor a post, get matched instantly with quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed are going to match your job description, then you invite them to apply and you get connected. No more jumping from site to software to cell phone. Manage everything from your employer dashboard where you can easily schedule virtual interviews. Get started at Indeed.com/credit. What do you need to watch for? The matchups that matter for this round of the playoffs next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Ken and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Get at us on the CNG call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. We're asking you, which team's exit would be the most surprising? And Gojo, looking at the divisional round, we figured that we would dive a little bit deeper into the actual matchups on the field, get into some X's and O's, some personnel stuff. Remember last week in Super Wild Card Weekend, we talked about what player would be the X factor. This week, we want to boil it down to the individual matchups that we see having a huge impact on the game's outcome. And so we got to get it started. We got to get it kicked off with the first game on the slate in Saturday's schedule, which will be the Titans and the Bengals.
Bengals at Titans.
Ooh, sped that one up a little bit.
Oh, yeah, just a little bit, just a little bit. But Gojo, for me, this one is simple. It's Chidobe Awuzie, the corner for the Cincinnati Bengals, going up against A.J. Brown. We know the formula for the Tennessee Titans, what they want to do offensively, especially with Derrick Henry back in the lineup. I anticipate him getting 20-plus touches in this game. They want to run the football, run it again, and then run it some more. And so in order for the Cincinnati Bengals to stop it, they're going to have to drop one of those safeties down in the box, create those eight-box looks, and make it a little bit tougher for them. We know that there's no Larry Ogunjobi for the Cincinnati Bengals. He's out with an ankle injury, so they're going to need to fortify that defensive front to slow down that run. That means that those corners have got to hold up in one-on-one passing situations, pass coverage situations, and of course, it's going to be A.J. Brown as their number one receiver. So Awuzie has got to be up for the task if they're going to have a shot in this ballgame.
Chris, you and I were very much thinking alike on this game, but on different sides of the equation here. I went on the other side because we know exactly where this game's going to be won if it's Cincinnati. Points through the air. Ja'Marr Chase has led the NFL in deep touchdown receptions during this season. Going up against his former high school and college teammate in Christian Fulton on the other side here. I think that matchup, a lot of the familiarity baked into that. We know he could be one of a few that matches up with Ja'Marr Chase, but it's going to be. We know on the other side, that is a Cincinnati defense that struggles defending play action pass the way that Tennessee throws it. And so I think with that and the rushing attack, the way you beat a team that wants to grind it out is continuously hitting big plays when everyone involved knows it. We saw it against Kansas City for the Cincinnati Bengals. It's going to have to be true again here. All right.
49ers at Packers.
Read my mind on that one, Renee. 49ers at Packers. Chris, you brought this up earlier. Biggest spread of the weekend. Green Bay 5.5-point favorites in this one here. What's the matchup you're dialed in on?
Oh, man, this is easy for me. It's Nick Bosa, who we just got word is going to play in this game, against David Bakhtiari, the left tackle for the Green Bay Packers. Listen, we saw what that 49ers pass rush did to Dak Prescott and the Cowboys last week. Sacked Dak 5 times in that game. Aaron Rodgers is just like any other quarterback. When you put him under pressure, when you put him under the rest, he's going to struggle. That's when you see the jump in his turnover-worthy plays. And so I think that's got to be the philosophy for that defensive front. And the Green Bay Packers offensive line has got to find a way to be able to keep A-Rod clean so he can do what he does best. So the matchup that's going to determine the outcome of this game, Nick Bosa versus David Bakhtiari. Whoever wins that one is going to give their team a huge edge when it comes to being able to win.
Yeah, I know neither of us was shocked that somehow Nick Bosa managed to clear concussion protocol this week.
Exactly.
Stunned that he's back out on the field for this team. Chris, for this one, I'm going to go Jimmy Garoppolo against Rasul Douglas in this matchup here. The Niners are 3-6 when Jimmy G throws an interception, 7-0 when he doesn't. Rasul Douglas has been one of the most important pickups in the midseason for any team. Led the NFL in interception return yards since week 8. He has not only taken the ball away, but he's converted into points for Green Bay. And we know that's going to be the key. Can Jimmy G stay out of his own way long enough for this Niners rushing attack and D-line to take hold and do their thing?
Rams at Buccaneers.
So much baked into this one. Chris, where do you want to start here? We know this is a game where injury is going to affect the outcome, maybe more than most, but what's on the field you like?
Oh, man, it's got to be the matchup between Jalen Ramsey and Mike Evans. I get that that you got to be concerned a little bit with Jalen Ramsey trying to be thrown on Gronkowski. I think that there'll be some of that from Raheem Morris, but I think they'll major in putting Ramsey on Mike Evans. That's the only real big play threat that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have, the guy that they're going to target downfield in that offense. And so I think that you've got to try to find a way to be able to erase that, take that away from Tom Brady, eliminate that element, and Jalen Ramsey is the perfect weapon to do that. One of the rangiest corners in the National Football League. He's got size, so there won't be that advantage for Mike Evans. So I think that's the matchup that I'm looking at, because we see that Brady has a real comfort level with Mike Evans, especially with the downfield passing attack outside of the numbers. So that's the matchup that I'm looking at. Can they take Mike Evans out of this game with Jalen Ramsey? Going to go a long ways to determining who wins.
One of the physically freakiest matchups out there. Jalen Ramsey, so much. He is your offensive lineman's favorite corner because of how physical he plays that position. Chris, I got to go up front of the trenches on this one. And before, I was looking at the matchup we expected that we'd get in this game here. Unsure if Tristan Wirfs was going to be available on one side going up against Wells, Von Miller, Von Miller there. You thought you might have Wells actually backing him up. But based on the injury news that we've seen, I want to flip to the other line of scrimmage, because I thought it was going to be what we saw here with Shaq Barrett and JPP against Andrew Whitworth and Rob Havenstein. But now we heard the news that Andrew Whitworth out, going to likely be Joe Noteboom starting at left tackle in his place. So what are they able to do at tackle against those bookends? Because, Chris, we know from that first matchup this year, the Rams want to spread this thing out. They want to be able to challenge the middle of the field and the back end personnel for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and that requires your tackles being able to hold up against that pass rush. I think that's going to be the difference in the entire game.
Bills at Chiefs.
All right. This one is easy for me, Gojo, and I get it. Kansas City is laying 1.5 at home, which is really saying that they think Buffalo is favored on a neutral field, but I'm going with the key matchup of Travis Kelce against Tremaine Edmonds and or Micah Hyde. Like, that's what it is. Travis Kelce against that middle of that Buffalo Bills defense. Kelce in their first matchup in week 5 6 catches, 57 yards, and 1 touchdown, but it was a pedestrian score in the fourth quarter where the game was well out of hand. He's going to have an impact. He's going to have to put his imprint on this game if the Chiefs are going to extend their home winning streak in the playoffs to 6 games. And so Travis Kelce going up against the Buffalo Bills defense that has allowed the second fewest catches by opposing tight ends in the National Football League. It's going to be a huge challenge for him, but we know that Chiefs offense ain't right unless number 87 is getting loose.
See, we really are like two sides of the same coin here. I promise, we didn't even plan these out together beforehand. Chris, I went the tight end matchup on the other side here. Dawson Knox against Tyrann Mathieu for the Buffalo Bills. Dawson Knox coming off career highs in receptions, yards, and touchdowns, averaging 12 yards a reception this year. And the thing with him is, he's either making a game-changing play or a game-changing drop. And I think how he goes in this matchup, because for all the weapons they've put around Josh Allen, he's become that security blanket for him. He could be the guy that defenses forget about. And we know with how much the Chiefs want to potentially get after you, send guys on blitzes, it's going to come down to that linebacking core, Willie Gay, Nick Bolton. But Tyrann Mathieu is that jack-of-all-trades piece in the middle to be able to neutralize him while the rest try and go to work on Steph Diggs and this receiving core for the Buffalo Bills. Man, eyes in the same place. This is good. Good teamwork here on the show on Canty and Golic Jr. That's some of what to watch for heading into wild card weekend, the divisional round this weekend in the NFL for the best games that money can buy. Coming up next, though, we need to show you what to listen for in the world of college basketball, because one head coach is sick and damn tired. We'll tell you who that was next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Which team's exit would be the most surprising in the divisional round? That's the question we're throwing out to our listeners. Join us on the CNG hotline, 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. And Gojo, I know we spent a lot of this show focused on the playoffs in the NFL, and rightfully so, because it is a Football Friday. But I do feel like we've got to dive into some comments made by one Penny Hardaway, head coach of men's basketball at Memphis. And Penny didn't mince any words when he had at the media for some of the questions that they asked him.
Say to this media, because this media gets kind of up sometimes when it comes to me. We don't have our full roster. Y'all know we don't have our full roster. Stop asking me stupid questions about if I feel like I can do something. If I had my roster like they did, then I feel like I can do whatever I want to do. I'm coaching really hard. My boys are playing really hard. I'm not embarrassed about nothing. We have 4 freshmen starting. Y'all need to act like it. Act like we got 17, 18, and 19-year-olds out here trying to learn how to play against 22, 23, and 24-year-old guys. Come on, man. Stop disrespecting me, bro. Like, don't do that. I work too hard. I work way too hard for that. Y'all write all these articles about me, and all I do is work. We got young kids on the floor. They got young kids on the floor.
Chris, that sounds like someone that has been waiting to get that off his chest for a while. And like, Chris, I think this is also a reminder of what coaches have been continuing to go through during this season, because we haven't talked about it much, but the pandemic and COVID-19 have continued to have an outsized effect on college basketball. And for Memphis, they came into this season after winning the NIT last year. They had a couple of top 5 recruits they landed. Jalen Duren, Amani Bates were big names that they were looking forward to there. This season has been injury. It's been COVID issues for them. And so they did start 3 freshmen and a sophomore against SMU in that loss. I think this is just someone who's been frustrated by circumstance. And we saw what playing sports in the pandemic has done to a lot of coaches and programs out there. And I think we've forgotten how much of this they've had to deal with at the college basketball level while we've had this NFL season going on.
Yeah, and the other layer to it, Gojo, is the line of questioning. And it's not like it's a question that's totally out of pocket, but when you ask a coach whether he's lost faith in his ability to be able to get the job done, or you ask him whether he's embarrassed by his performance, you're gonna get that adverse reaction right there. You're gonna get that explosion. And I think that reporter got exactly what he was looking for. I liken it to the situation that we saw with the Buffalo Bills, Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde, after that embarrassing loss that they had to the New England Patriots, where the Patriots threw the football all of 3 times. And they asked those guys, were you embarrassed in your performance and how you lost the game tonight? They got the reaction that they were looking for. And so I think sometimes reporters can goat coaches and players into having that explosive reaction. But when you ask a player or you ask a coach if they're embarrassed by something or have they lost faith in their ability to be able to get the job done, that's something that you know is deeply personal, and that attacks that individual's pride. And I think that's why we saw the reaction that Penny had yesterday.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, I mean, listen, Penny Hardaway is someone who came into this from the AAU side of things. I think there were a lot of reasons people wanted to see him fail coming over into this spot, too. And so I'm sure he's felt that. This has been a guy who's had eyes on him from the moment he came into this, for all the obvious reason. I mean, he's Penny freaking Hardaway, but coming into this with all of that, starting off the season as highly ranked as they were, losing 8 out of your last 12, that's understandable frustration. But you're right, it's also getting poked a little bit in all of this. I think it's going to ultimately subside, Chris, but this is going to be one of those things. Now the target just grows even more, and now everyone's going to walk into a press conference. You know this. The minute you let someone see this bothers me in that way, now this is going to be opened up to more reporters, I'm sure, looking for that same response from here on out.
Yeah, but it's a teachable moment for all of his players as well, because he mentioned it. He's coaching 17, 18, 19-year-olds. You have to have poise when you're dealing with the media. You've got to have poise in adverse situations throughout the course of a season. And so I think there's a lesson to be learned in all of this. And Penny Hardaway will be the first one to step up and say he wishes that he could have handled his delivery a little bit better under those circumstances. He got what he wanted to get off his chest. And I'll never try to walk back a man saying what he wants to say the way he wants to say it. But I think moving forward, you know, rather than serving as a distraction or something that's taking attention away from what you guys are doing on the court, you could try to, you know, answer questions in a way that brings the focus back to the team and brings the focus back to the improvements that need to be made in order for the team to get to where they want to be. So big picture, it's one of those things that's probably just a blip on the radar. I don't think he's in trouble from a job security standpoint because, let's face it, the program is relevant for the first time since John Calipari was a part of it. So Penny Hardaway has done an incredible job of being able to restore some prestige to his alma mater. And so now it's all about being able to move the program forward, and I think he's the right man for that job.
Yeah, by a number of recruiting outlets. He signed the number one recruiting class this last offseason, but Penny's also a guy that's going to shoot you straight. Like, he was talking about his team back in December, and he said, quote, "We look like an AAU team. It looks bad, and I don't understand what these guys are thinking. There aren't enough guys in that locker room who care about winning unless they're the ones helping us win. It's not a team. That's the danger of having a lot of talent. The talent wants to play together, and right now that talent doesn't want to play together." So this is a coach that is going to keep it real with you. And as a player, Chris, I don't know about you, I always love knowing where I stand. So when you hear that, coaches are always talking to their players through the media. And in this spot, this is another loud message to everyone involved that, hey, I'm going to have your back. I'm going to have our back in public. But now we got to go and start handling business once we get all of our pieces back on the court.
No doubt. And that's why Bill Parcells is my favorite coach that I've ever played for, because he would treat the media the exact same way. And yet he would leave it up to the players, the guys in that locker room, to have his back and to support him by giving the results that everybody was looking for on the field. So you're absolutely right. Coaches that shoot you straight, that shoot the media straight, and coaches where you know where you stand, where you know the expectations, where you know what your specific role is in the team's success, I think those are coaches that overwhelmingly have the good relationships with players, which leads to sustained success. So yeah, I'm rooting for Penny Hardaway. I'm not going to lie about it. I want the best for him at that program. I think he's good for Memphis. I think he's good for college basketball.
Well, tune in tomorrow for more college basketball action. Duke's hosting Syracuse. Coverage begins at 11:30 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. But coming up next, today has been a flurry of injury news on the NFL front. We'll dive into maybe the most important player getting ready to return back to action for his team this weekend. Next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.